Blog Talk Radio.
Andrew, happy Monday. How are you?
Happy Monday. Happy July 10th to you. I'm doing great. It's hot, but I can handle it.
How hot is it in Minnesota? Is it very hot?
You know, it's not that it's very hot. I've complained about this off air. We just have I have no AC in this room that I record in. So it feels like 130 in here. It's probably like 85, but.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not, well, as long as the humidity's down. Like, at least with me, if there's no humidity in the room, it's okay. I can survive at like 75 or even 80 if it's nice and dry. It's when you get that humidity in the air where it's like, no, thanks.
No, it's sticky. Yep, that's no fun.
Speaking of things that are, well, not so hot, we'll transition.
Nice.
Let's start with a conversation about the collision ratings. We'll get the phone calls. I'm going to forget the number. I got to look it up here. 515-605-9345. We'll get the phone calls. A couple people already lined up. We'll get there in a second. But collision ratings, a couple of things about collision before we kind of get into it here. The ratings, not so good from an overall like numbers standpoint. However, what's interesting is it seems that as long as they're in the top five of the cable ratings, TNT is going to be fine. That is out there. It's been reported. It's kind of what's been floated as being the standard. They want to be in the top five of the cable ratings. Now, we don't know where they were this past week because the ratings aren't out yet. 2 weeks ago, they were, which was a taped show and not expected to be very well done. I mean, it wasn't a very good show, was number five on Saturday night. This was back on June 24th. So it was behind SportsCenter on ESPN, behind a Gold Cup soccer match between the U.S. and Jamaica, behind the College World Series, but ahead of the UFC Fight Night prelims, ahead of a bunch of cable news stations. As long as they're in the top five, it sounds like the TNT is going to be fine with that. TNT was not, from what I saw, was not even charting in the top 150.
Wow.
Before Collision, they were mostly just running reruns of movies.
Yeah.
On Saturday nights on TNT, and you know when the NHL and NBA playoffs were on, they were in the top five. They were the top, some of the top programming on Saturday night. But going back to March before those playoffs started and those games were on Saturdays, you couldn't even find them in the top 50, which is nuts. But they just weren't there. So they go from basically not charting to being top five. Even though the viewership numbers aren't great, it's like 600,000, 500,000, 600,000. Mm-hmm. It sounds like as long as they stay in this top five range, because it's Saturday night television, it sucks. Like nobody watches TV on Saturday. So it sounds like as long as they're in that top five range, that TNT is going to be perfectly happy with what they're delivering. And so far, it seems that they've been able to do that, even though the numbers have not been very good.
That's crazy that they were not in the top 50, because I can't even think of, like, aren't they like a top five cable channel?
Yeah. Yeah. I looked on a couple of Saturdays back in like February and early part of March before the playoffs started, could not find them.
Wow.
And what did they air? That they were airing, an Avengers movie or something.
Yeah.
From 2012.
Right. Yeah.
they were airing just old movie reruns. There was no original programming on TNT those nights.
Yeah, so it is kind of crazy. I mean, I think we knew week one that that initial like 800,000, like that was no way was that sustainable. I mean, like you're saying, there's just like not you're just gonna have a much smaller amount of people who are gonna be free on a Saturday night. That's just how it goes. But I think the drop was probably faster than a lot of people were expecting. But I mean, yeah, that's interesting to know that it may not matter that much. They may be able to just do 400,000 and like TNT's happy with that, which is crazy. But because I know, fans are getting riled up on Twitter, like Andrade is kind of defending them. Defending the low ratings, saying like, hey, we're trying to build something here. I think Dax did the same thing. So there's got to be a little bit of like disappointment. But hey, it may not completely matter if they're going to be safe for a long time.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Like, I'm just looking at some of the numbers, and this is back on June 24th. We don't have this past weekend's yet. June 24th. Yeah, no, this is right. June 24th is the last one that ShowBuzz Daily has up for Saturdays. They don't have...
Oh.
They don't have last week's, I guess.
Really? Like the first or so? Whenever that was?
Why don't I see that on here? Hold on. I may be looking at a bad... I may be looking at a bad link, Andrew. Hold on.
Oh.
Oh, no. No, you know what it is? I wonder if it's because of a holiday. Excuse me. Yeah, they don't... ShowBuzz Daily only has ratings up to June 29th on their website at the moment.
Odd. I feel that I saw them out there, but maybe not.
It's possible they're out there just from another source. But yeah. I'm looking at the ratings from Saturday, June 24th, which I guess would have been their second week, Collision's second week. But just what else is what else drew on Saturdays? So that week, Collision was at 595,000. They were 0.21 in the demo, which is what the ranking was based on. They were at 595,000 viewers. The UFC Fight Night prelims, 492,000. That Gold Cup soccer match I was talking about, 642,000. The College World Series was 2.5 million. Sports Center was 1.3 million. Not a lot. I mean, other than that, and then a bunch of cable news was up over a million. But other than that, and I think it has to do with the fact that it's a Saturday. But like, I'm looking here at it was on at the same time. Love in Paradise. I don't even know what that is on TLC. 424,000 viewers. On Patrol Live at 9 p.m. on Reels did 785,000 viewers, but a much lower number in the demo. There's not a lot on here that's over a million, and I think it has to do with the fact that, I mean, basically almost everything on here that's over a million was either the College World Series or cable news. And it's probably just because it's a Saturday and not a lot of people. It's almost like it's a different standard that we have to measure this show with because of the fact that it's on a Saturday night.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And I think like a lot of those shows are only probably like half hour shows. So, I mean, TNT is basically getting four of those, instead of just one. Yeah.
That's a good point. That's a good point. One more quick thing on Collision and then we'll get the phone calls. What do you think? Well, I guess let's start with the match. What did you think of Punk versus Joe?
I thought it was good. Not amazing. I wish they would have probably given it a few more minutes. But overall, I dug it. Punk looks good. I've been, a little worried about him that he's going to get hurt again. But he was pretty physical. He took some bigger bumps. I enjoyed the style of it overall. And the announcers, too. I thought they did a good job. What did you think?
Yeah, I think they're getting better. Like, I think Kevin and Nigel are definitely getting more comfortable. You can kind of tell. Not comfortable with each other. They're very comfortable with each other. But more comfortable with the product. They seem to be more aware of it. But the match I thought was good. I mean, look, it wasn't going to look the way it looked when they were in their 20s because they're in their 40s now. They can't move the way that they did then. But overall, I thought the match was really good. I thought it lived up to the hype. I mean, it was a match that I was excited to watch, being a fan of both of those guys. And then just overall, like kind of the presentation of the show, I find the way Collision is presented, because it is presented differently than Dynamite. For my taste, it's more pleasing to watch, opening the show with the snippets of the sound bites at the beginning and kind of building up what you're going to see on the show. Like, I think I said this before, but it feels more like a traditional wrestling program to me. And it's just, I guess, what I prefer as a viewer.
It does feel slower to me. And I don't mean that in a bad way because I think Dynamite.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and I would actually be curious to just, like, look at the amount of segments, look at the amount of matches, like, how long matches go compared to Dynamite, because it feels slower. And maybe that's what they're going for. Just like, hey.
Yeah, I think it's a purpose, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it looks right now, and this could always change, but, like, it seems like the roster is smaller than Dynamite, and that may just be because they're only picking the people that get along with Punk, but... So maybe they kind of need to because they don't have like 60 people to take and instead have, 35 or so. So they kind of have to like use those people, give them longer time. But so far, I think that's a good direction to go. I think they need to do as much as they can to differentiate it just to make it feel like a major show, unlike, say, Rampage.
Yeah, and I think they have to also not go back to Regina, Saskatchewan.
Oh, the last 2 weeks have just been rough.
and I don't even think, like, I don't think that that's unique to Collision. I think that's unique to friggin' Regina. Like, no offense to the fine people of Regina, Saskatchewan, but... Like, I think if you put dynamite in that building, they weren't going to draw either. Like, it's just, it's not a very big market.
No, some of those shots were about the emptiest I'd ever seen in AEW Arena.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was too, as good as like Joe Punk was, it probably would have been a great match with a hot crowd.
I think it's a huge match if they did it in Philadelphia. You know, let me ask you, and I don't know because I don't remember. Did the fine folks of Regina, Saskatchewan, did they even get to see the like the original Punk Joe matches? Was Ring of Honor even in Canada at that point, like in 2002?
Oh, I would be surprised.
I'm not sure if they were.
Yeah, I'd be really surprised.
You know?
That's actually a good point, like why they wouldn't just hold off on that match. I mean, well, I'm just trying to think that through. Because one, it, side note, but it's like goofy that they're running multiple tournaments right now with the tag tournament, Women's Owen Hart, Men's Owen Hart. So they could have just, like, waited to do the Owen Hart tournament until they could have got to, like, Philly or something. But I guess they probably thought that was going to be a big hook for Canada. It just maybe was, just not for Regina.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I just don't think they'll be back there anytime soon, nor should they. I mean, the crowd was fine. They were trying to get into it, but just based on the size, they can't go back there again.
No. It's
not anytime soon. And
yeah.
I think... What's interesting, I haven't read the emails. We'll see in a minute, in a little bit anyway, if people are you know, going to try to tell us that, oh, this is proof that CM Punk can't draw. Like, again, I think you put dynamite in that same building, they get the same type of crowd. Like, it's just, it's a small, tiny market, and not even in the U.S. and you listen to like whether or not people can even see the show, and it sounds like it's hard to even watch Collision if you're in Canada. Like, it's not on television; you have to watch it on like a TSN app or something. So who knows how many people? There's probably people in that building that had not seen an episode of Collision until they went there on Saturday night, because you can't even watch the show in the country. Like, it felt like a bad business decision to even put that many shows in a row in Canada right off the bat. You launch the show in front of an almost sold out crowd or whatever, big crowd at the United Center. And then you go to like all these Canadian shows and the show's not even on TV in Canada. Like, I don't know who made that decision. I don't know if that's a Tony decision or if that's a live events decision that's made, you know, above Tony's head, but like someone should be held accountable for that. 'Cause those are just dumb decisions. like go hold all these shows in a country where the program's not even on television.
I shouldn't blame him because I have absolutely no idea. But isn't this kind of like in Jeff Jarrett's wheelhouse that he was doing? Like,
I thought so.
Yeah. I don't want to blame him specifically, but I feel getting arenas and stuff like that was in his wheelhouse.
And look, maybe, like you said, they just figured we'll draw crowds because it's the Owen Hart tournament. Clearly, no. Or maybe yes, if they went to Calgary.
Yeah. Whatever they were for Dynamite looked good on TV. Where Jericho was, I'm blanking on where it was. Was that Calgary?
I forget. I'd have to go back and look.
Yeah. It would have been better.
I can look here.
It would have been better just to run a couple shows there.
Yeah. I mean, they did draw a much better crowd. There's no question about that. Where the hell was that? Let me take a look. It wasn't Toronto.
No.
Hold on. I got to go back and find the report. I can go off of... Well, I can go off of wage reports, right?
Oh.
Well, it shouldn't take me take me this long to find this, Andrew. This is the... it's what happens when a guy who's getting older doesn't know how to use the internet. Hold on. No, here it is. It was Edmonton. Edmonton, Alberta.
Oh.
Edmonton. So very close to Calgary, like 4 hours away.
Oh. I am terrible with Canadian geography. I've only been there once, so.
I only know it because of hockey.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. It's the only reason why I know. The only reason why I know where Regina, Saskatchewan is.
Oh, I have no idea. Is that by Minnesota? Like north of it, or is that
So, yeah. You know what? I'm trying to – Saskatchewan is probably above It's probably pretty close to Minnesota. It's probably like above Minnesota or North Dakota, somewhere in that area, I bet. I don't have a map in front of me, but that's just what I've got. Like Alberta and British Columbia are the most western, I believe.
Yeah.
I think British Columbia is right on the water. Alberta's the next one in. There's Canadian people listening to us right now that are
talking
about this. Like, it's like, you know, this magical place, Canada. Yeah, but I think it's British Columbia, Alberta, and then I think Saskatchewan's like the third most inland province. So it's probably right around Minnesota, I bet. Maybe right somewhere in that neighborhood. Because Ontario is like right above Detroit, I believe. And like Buffalo.
Yeah.
And then Montreal is East Coast, like Quebec.
And this is a note probably not interesting to anyone but myself, but it's like, you know, I'm way physically closer to Canada than, say, Texas, but I know like 100 times more about Texas than Canada.
So you've only been to Canada once?
Yeah, I only went to Niagara Falls, so I've not experienced it. I would like to go someday, but just have not.
It's cool. Like, it's interesting to me how different parts of the country are. And again, I'm sure there's Canadians listening to this right now that are like, oh, my God. But we went to, like, so we went to Niagara Falls last year for a little family vacation. And it was fun. Like, I forgot how much of a touristy place it was because I hadn't been there since I was a kid.
Yeah.
But, like, Toronto, like, to me, Toronto feels like any American city. Like, Toronto could be Boston, could be New York, could be Minneapolis. Like, it feels like any regular city. I've been to Montreal, which feels a little bit different because there's a little bit of a French influence. I've been to Quebec City, which has a lot of French influence. And this is where I bet it feels similar to Minnesota. Like, I haven't been to Western Canada a ton, but the two times I've been out there, you've got the big city centers like Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, stuff like that. And then it's just like you could get 10 miles outside the city and it's just farms for like hundreds of miles. I think Brock Lesnar lives in Saskatchewan now, I think, doesn't he?
Does he? I can never keep tabs on him. I know he was in Minnesota for a long time, but I think he left.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's like that farm that he has, I think, is in Saskatchewan, I believe.
Wow.
I could be wrong about that. But I know, like, again, covering hockey, there was a kid, a quick aside, but I have always found the story to be fascinating. And then we'll get back to wrestling. I covered a kid who was from, or I did a story on a kid once who was from a town in Alberta called Camrose, Alberta. And it's a farm town. Like I don't know how close it is to Calgary or Edmonton, but it's a farm town. Like everybody has a farm. So when he came to the U.S. to play college hockey for the first time, it was the first time he ever came to the U.S. And he was amazed that people had mailboxes like at their house. And I remember like his parents are the ones telling me the story at a hotel. Like I saw them at the restaurant or something. I was there working and they were there to visit and see their kid play. And he was like, yeah, you know, he was so amazed that people had mailboxes and the mail was delivered right to your home. And I was like, what are you, like, I think they must've saw the look on my face and me be like, what are you talking about? Like, yeah, of course we have mailboxes. And I guess this town that they're from, it's a farm town and it's a big town, but there's only like, you know, 500 people that live in the town because it's all farmland. It's big in terms of square miles, not in terms of people. So the guy was telling me, he's like, you know, we have to drive like 10 minutes into town and to our PO box. Like the mailman, there's no such thing as the mail coming to the house because we don't have a neighbor for like 3 miles in either direction.
Oh yeah.
So I was like, oh, I guess I can see that. Yeah. But like, that's what I remember about West, like the times I've been out there is just, you can get to some of those stretches where it's farm forever, just farmland.
That seems like awful because you would drive for like 20 minutes, whatever, to get your mail. And it's just bills and advertisements. Like, I feel like I would just let it stack up a gigantic pile. And then I would miss something important and somehow end up in jail.
go once a month to get your mail.
Yeah.
I don't even think I need to get mail anymore.
I check it like once a week and it's like, here's a bill that I already paid electronically. I'm like, all right.
That's what I mean. Everything I get is either something, it's a receipt for something I paid electronically or it's something I rip up and throw away. I don't know the last time I got a piece of mail where I was like, oh, I need to do something with this or keep it or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's been a while for sure.
All right. Sorry for the Canadian mail talk. But back to wrestling before we get to phone calls, which we will do in about literally 2 minutes. Did you see Wade's report on CM Punk as far as what he's been like backstage at Collision?
I did. It sounds like the initial reviews are pretty good.
Yeah, I'll read directly from Wade's report here. CM Punk is getting showing good leadership backstage and seems to be taking seriously his role as a locker room leader. According to PW Tour sources, Punk has an incentive to repair his damaged reputation as a malcontent without a filter or the necessary social skills to get along with others in powerful positions, both to secure cheers from the savvy, well-read fans and also to show up his locker room rivals who are veteran leaders on Dynamite. The word backstage at Collision is that he is taking seriously that this is, quote, his show, end quote. There we go. And he's taking pride in putting his stamp on the on-air product and off-air vibe in the locker room. Our sources don't necessarily reflect the views of everyone back in the back, and some may have different experiences that are less positive. But overall, the vibe appears to be moving in the right direction after some tension in the first week back relating to his early digs at the Bucks. There has been no such insider digs in his promo since then, and alluded to the issues he had with the Elite and others in the past. So, yeah, I mean, and he also says here, Tony Khan assembled the Collision roster strategically to remove people who had conflicts with Punk from being around him on Saturday nights, and that appears to be paying off. I found that interesting because, yes, that is true. It is a friendly Punk show as far as who his counterparts are on the show. But, you know, I think it does say something, too, when you look at who else is he working with. Like, yes, he's going to be working with Samoa Joe, and he's, you know, kind of aligned with FTR. But he's also going to work with Ricky Starks next week, which is going to be pretty interesting because, you know, if Punk, who did it, showed signs, I think, in his initial run of wanting to help get younger talent over and elevate people, he has an opportunity to do that next week with Ricky Starks. And I don't think Starks has to win in order for that to happen, but I'm very curious how that match plays out.
I am too. I'm assuming Starks either goes heel to win, or I just don't see them giving Punk that big win right away and letting him win the title. So
yeah, what if Samoa Joe helps Ricky Starks win?
I mean, that could be a fun pairing. I could see that.
And then maybe that sets up the because look, they did the angle. I feel like there's going to be another Joe Punk match. So maybe that gives Starks the win.
Oh.
It also gives him a reason to not chase Starks and instead branch off and do something with Joe.
That could work. I'm kind of interested in a Ricky Starks heel turn again, but though he hasn't been faced all that long. So, I mean, you don't want to like rush a bunch of those, but I don't think he's fully getting over at a face at the level I kind of thought he was going to a few months ago.
Yes. No, I would agree. Okay. Let's get to phone calls before people get impatient and start hanging up on us. I got to start putting notes here on these numbers. I'll see if I can do that now, but as we go anyway. But I believe this is DJ from Miami who has the 305 area code. If I am wrong, please correct me. But if I am right, you can just go right into your call. Hello.
DJ from Miami.
Yeah, I was right. I knew I was right. How are you?
I got a couple questions. I don't know who's booking or who's telling Tony what, but I got a couple of them. My first thing is with the Acclaim and saying he was gay. I thought for sure that was going to go crazy and media and that was going to go nuts and not really, it didn't go too far, but like, it was kind of crazy. Like, they were like, he's gay. And nobody even knew. I didn't even know he was gay. Like, how the hell did the crowd know? It was kind of crazy. But I thought for sure that was going to go away.
I did know that. Because I don't think they had referenced it on TV before. But I know I had read stories, either feature stories that were done on him, or maybe it was even something on YouTube that I saw or something. But I thought it was out there and pretty well established. Like, I think that I had known well before that crowd interaction took place, Andrew.
Yeah, same. I don't remember when I found out, but I feel it's been a while.
Neither do I.
I think he's pretty openly and like, you know, in the community and supportive. So yeah, I think, just him saying that on TV was pretty, it's crazy because like, you know, we go back 20 years and like Billy and Chuck and like that would be, you know, to be laughed at and booed. So it's cool to see that like come so far.
I think he even said that. I think I saw an interview where it was either an interview or something on social media where he was like, if you told me I'd ever be standing in the middle of the ring getting that chant on television and it would be a positive thing, it was like, you know, I never would have imagined that would have been possible when he first broke in or something to that effect. I'd have to find the quote. I'm paraphrasing, but
mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was a cool moment. It really was.
Do you think, I mean, I just thought, like, people were going to go crazy and hate it, but people were going, they were loving it. So I just thought that was kind of, like, a little out there. But, you know, I don't know. And then, like, with the, I'm sick of the screwdriver thing. Like, that's something that Tony needs to, like, this, why screwdriver? Why, like, it's so weird. Like, of all things out of blue screwdriver, like, that's something he needs to work on, too, but... I feel like all this blood every day, every show, is just killing it, you know? They don't need blood on Saturdays. And then when the guy called everybody hillbillies and Canada, that was kind of funny. I don't know who thought of that, too. So there's just so much stuff. Like, I don't know where's Tony Khan's coming out with this stuff, but... I don't know if it's getting worse or better or who's doing what. You know what I'm saying? This is nuts.
Yeah, on the blood thing, I mean, Andrew, you and I have talked about it. It just, they do it so much, it kind of does lose its appeal after a while, or the impact that it has when it's such a frequent occurrence.
Yeah, I mean, if you said, like, two different wrestlers bled on Saturday, I'd believe you. If you said zero bled, like, I have no memory of it just because it doesn't stand out anymore. I don't mind bleeding in wrestling, but I think you save it for like once a month when, and you make it count every 5-6 shows or something, you know, or, unless it's like an accident, but I, if you do it, make it count. Otherwise it's just, you become desensitized to it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know. This is kind of funny. So I just like, this is too much. You know what I mean? So I think if they cool down on Saturdays with no blood, I think the show would be better. So, my second thing is, on the streets, they're saying they have nothing for Bray Wyatt. Personally, it's stupid. He should have went to EAW. I think personally, he should have took over, you know, either the Black or something, because he's just sitting home doing nothing. It's just like, I don't know what's the real truth. Does he not want to work? They have really nothing for him. They have nothing for him. Let him go. I feel like Buddy Murphy can be a great baby face if Bray Wyatt would take Buddy Murphy's spot. I don't know, but at the end of the day, I just feel like he might go over there because he's just sitting home collecting dust. And I think also his brother might be better over there too compared to being Uncle Howdy or whatever the hell he was, you know what I'm saying? I mean, he's collecting
dust. Yeah.
He's a wrestler, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a contract issue. I don't know what his contract is. Obviously, he's not going anywhere if he's in a contract. I don't think Andrew, I don't think WWE is going to be in the business of releasing people just to let them go somewhere else. But unless he's hurt, they can't freeze it. So I would have to assume at some point that contract will run out. It's just, I have no idea when that is going to be. I don't think that's been reported anywhere that his deal's coming up soon. Like, we know Drew McIntyre's is, but I haven't heard anything on Wyatt's. Have you?
No, I would have guessed that it was like a 3-year deal or something, because Triple H was back in charge, and I think that was probably, you know, pretty exciting for Bray Wyatt that he would have got to do a lot more of what he wanted to do because he was butting heads with Vince McMahon. So I assume he didn't just like sign him to like a 1-year deal. My guess is he's going to be locked up for like 2 more, possibly longer, because I was reading about him earlier, and all that I've seen is that it's like a mystery illness. So no idea what's happened to him, but I imagine he's a super creative guy. I mean, whether we like what he does or not, he's a creative guy, and I imagine he probably wishes he'd gone to AEW at this point, because his last run has been pretty bad, and I think Vince McMahon being back in charge is probably not great for his future there. But that's just my thoughts.
I guess my last thing, quick thing, is Andrade. Why the hell? I mean, for real, can they find him a real manager? This is crazy. There's so many decent managers they can bring out as a real manager, like a Paul Heyman or somebody that they can bring out. It just makes no sense. This guy cannot be on the mic. He's horrible. You know, sometimes last before they were doing the captions, like Miro. It's like these guys, I don't, sometimes you can't understand Miro, but sometimes you can. But Andrade definitely needs somebody. He's an okay wrestler, but they need to bring in real managers, not fake managers or something with him. Because otherwise, let him sit home again.
Are there any real, I mean, with the exception of Heyman and maybe Don Callis, Andrew, are there any real managers even? Like, it's not even, unfortunately, because, I mean, I'd love to see it. It's like just, it's not a taught skill anymore.
I mean, are we talking, like, good managers or just managers? Because I guess they're technically Jose the Assistant. Harley Cameron /
Do any of them even talk? I mean, the whole idea of the manager when we were younger was the guy couldn't talk, so this guy talked, or this guy or girl talked for them. But now it's like half these managers are just out there waving a megaphone around. They don't even actually talk.
Yeah, I would like to pitch, and I just looked her up to see what she's up to, but Selena De La Renta.
Yes.
From, like, Major League Wrestling. I don't understand how she's not in WWE or AEW right now. She's good. Like,
yeah,
and
she's
a good talker. She's confident. She's 26. I think that could be a good pairing.
Yeah, I agree. I think they need someone like that. They need someone who can – some of these guys need people to talk for them. It's just like – it's always been that way. It's fine.
Yeah, it happens.
I just feel like they fake, like, managers. Like Anna Jay can be definitely Jungle Boy's manager. It's just like, I don't understand. She can talk pretty okay, but it's just like, why don't they pull the trigger on decent managers? Like, you know, it's like – the guy walks out with them and doesn't say anything, just watches and just makes faces. Like, what is that going to prove? You know?
Yeah, I don't think it does anything. Yeah, no, he could use someone for sure. Jungle Boy could use a talker, Andrew, I think.
Oh, for sure. They might just be waiting until – I'm assuming the Jericho Appreciation Society is going to break up soon. So they might just be waiting for that storyline to run its course and then move her over. But, yeah, no, I think that would be a good move, too, to put them together.
Anything else, DJ?
Yeah, really quick. I'm confused really fast on Spears. Can you please explain to me, of all places, when he comes back, Jungle Boy, I mean, the Dinosaur and Cage? Like, this is crazy. Like, you know, I thought he was going to go back to MJF, something, but... of all places, they put him there. I don't know why they're going to put Spears there. He's all right, but I don't know. He should definitely be more of a lackey than anything because that's what they treat him as.
100%. Yeah, I'm surprised he's back at all, Andrew, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I had some hopes for him when he first joined the company, and I thought he did some initial good work, like with some sit-down interviews, but... he has just not got over at any point, and they've tried a few different things with him. I think it's probably the – unless you just want him working, like, dark matches and, you know, helping younger talent, I just feel it's time. Because it's time to find a different role for him. Because, like, what is beating Sean Spears do for you? You know, it's not going to do much for Luchasaurus. Yeah, I would have given Luchasaurus a more, like, exciting opponent this early into his run. So, yeah. I'd move on.
Yep.
Can I ask you one more thing real quick? Out of curiosity, why do you – going back into Tony's booking, why do you think that Tony brought some fat jobber guy when there was so much great talent in over there in Canada? Like, I'm just making an example. Like, the dog, you know, like brother or son – or the Hearts, or somebody. There was so many people they could have brought up, but it brought some fat guy. It's like, come on, man! Like he could have been anybody. And there was so many great talent out there that, you know, that guy was not talent when they could have had somebody decent, you know, over there in Canada. With you know what I'm saying? I don't get that part. What do you think of that? Real quick, that was it. I was just thinking, what did you think somebody else was going to come out? Or did you guys think that definitely a fat, just regular, you know, jobber guy was coming out?
I had no expectations, Andrew. What about you?
I'm blanking on what this is. Like, who did he face?
When MGF fought,
I think it was just
he fought It was just this fat, just a jobber guy.
This is a local guy.
Gonna come out with, you know.
I mean, I guess it.
Be good, you know, like at least a decent, somebody decent, or you know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the idea is that it like creates heat just to like have MJF, you know, theoretically like beat the worst wrestler in Canada or whatever they were going for there. I think it just goes into his gimmick of putting in the least amount of work that he can.
I just thought it was funny. I thought for sure they were going to bring out somebody, you know, great, or one of the Hearts or something, you know, like, you know how MJF is, you know what I mean? So that's what I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, all right. We'll talk next week.
I think the injury's right, though. I think it's
–
all right. Sounds good, GJ. Thanks for the call again. Yeah. Andrew, I think you hit it right in the head. I think it was more the gimmick thing of he's going to bring out you expect someone and he's going to bring out this nobody and then beat him up.
Yeah.
Okay, up next. Again, if you're listening to this on a podcast feed and you want to call us on Mondays, 515-605-9345, that's all you got to do. Call it after 9 p.m. Eastern. That's when we start recording. 201, you're up next. 201, I don't have your number saved yet, so please, what is your name, where are you calling from, and what's on your mind?
Hey, my name's Mark. I called, not last week, the week before. So I've been tapping the show before. I'm calling back in to catch up. So let me bring up a couple points. So I'm a little backtracked on all of AEW because I'm just turned 40. I have a 2-year-old son, and my TV time is limited. I'm literally catching up on last week's Dynamite, like right now. I think I've got 20 minutes left in the show.
Oh.
In any case,
nice.
I was just thinking about, I took some notes, the last Dynamite, and I was kind of intrigued by, there was a storyline going on with Hangman Page and the Young Bucks and the Dark Order. And I thought that, I don't know who's writing this stuff, but it was kind of an interesting, like strange situation where Hangman had some loyalty towards the Dark Order and also to the Young Bucks. And, you know, and I thought like it created an interesting dynamic between the two groups. And it's strange. I wish like AEW would do more of this. They kind of like do some things where they create storylines that just kind of go nowhere. Like we had House of Black and they existed and they were kind of like this weird, like, we didn't know what they were doing or what they were up to, and they kind of just went nowhere. And I was just wondering if you had any thoughts on like the way the storylines were developing. And I mean, I don't follow wrestling that deeply, but like, I feel like, I mean, are there like injuries that are happening that these things just kind of end, or I'm not sure what's going on, but it seems like they've got the right idea, but it just kind of like doesn't play out the way it should.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, Andrew, the way I kind of feel about it is I think at the time that a group like the Dark Order was introduced, they were a bigger deal on the company because they had to be because the company was very small.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, very quickly, they assembled a larger group of talent at a pretty rapid pace, and it went from the Dark Order being a centerpiece act to the Dark Order not being a centerpiece act. Now, on top of that, Andrew, I think Tony also has a little bit of the Vince McMahon element in him where the attention span can be really short at times. And we see something happen on TV and then it goes away and it's either never talked about again or it goes away for weeks before the follow-up happens. Part of that, I feel like, often has to do with the fact that there's just so much that he's trying to cram into his shows. There's too much going on in the show, so the details can tend to get lost. Do you agree there? Is that playing a role into what Mark's talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's odd because Tony, I don't know if he expects or he just, like, believes that fans remember tons and tons and tons of stuff or know about different promotions and all these different wrestlers, but he doesn't seem to care that fans, like, know that he's dropping storylines. Like, if we sat down and we could probably write out a bunch of storylines that, like, oh yeah, this went nowhere, that went nowhere. but he doesn't seem to care about that very much. Hopefully that's getting cleaned up a bit with like the introduction of new people on the creative team. But yeah, I mean, I guess one thing I do, I'm not like super into this storyline at the moment, just because I think it's going to be hard for people to boo the Dark Order if that's what they're getting at. I just don't see like Johnny Hungy as like somebody that's going to really like, same with Luchasaurus, like somebody that's really going to rile people up. But I like the fact that they're playing off, you know, essentially 4 years worth of history at this point, and actually kind of paying off what they've done with Hangman, and him kind of like leaving the group on multiple occasions. So, yeah, I'm for them paying it off, but I don't know if it'll have like something super satisfying, but I guess we will see. Did that kind of answer your question?
Well, a bit, yeah, but I would agree with you that the payoff was there, but, for the amount of time they kind of put into this storyline, you would think that this would be like some sort of, like a main event type of situation where like, well, why would they play this out for a couple of years only to just have it flutter out on some random night on Dynamite, like in the middle of the whole show? Mm-hmm. It's kind of strange where he decides that this storyline is just going to kind of end. And in the same vein, I think, the opposite side of the coin was, I was always curious about like this, like the Jungle Boy Hook dynamic where like we suddenly had Jungle Hook and then for some reason, Jungle Boy turns heel and just takes Hook out. I mean, I didn't see it coming. I was surprised, I guess, but like there was no build up to it. It just kind of happened. And like, are we here to be shocked? Like, I'm not sure why they would play it out that way.
Yeah, I don't know either. And I think this is the stuff, again, where, like, Tony tries to – his intentions are good when he starts this stuff, but there's not enough follow-through, and I think it's just there's too much going on. I think he just loses focus.
I think it wasn't – sure. Yeah, and sorry. Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I think for, like, Jungle Hook 2, he didn't do enough effort beforehand, kind of like you're saying. Like, they had essentially one segment where he's like, hey – Jungle Boy's like, you're my best friend. And watching that, I'm like, well, why? Like,
yeah, why? Exactly.
They take together twice. Yeah. They never
just
talk.
Just because, Andrew.
So to make that, I think he pulled the trigger too soon on the Jungle Boy heel turn. At least, like, if it would have been more effective if they tagged on and off for another year and we saw them celebrate together and maybe win the titles or get close to winning the titles. But his explanation was like, you were always shoving the FTW title in my face, which no, he didn't. If he did, it was back, you know, like off air, because that was never part of it. He was never like showing anything off. And it's just like, it's too illogical to believe that, you know, it was the FTW title of all things that made Jungle Boy into a jerk. Like, just, I don't buy it.
And it's kind of frustrating because like, I feel like they've got the creativity to come up with these sort of storylines where like the current one is with MJF and Adam Cole kind of like buddying up because MJF is hyping himself up to be Adam Cole's partner for this tournament. And I kind of like that dynamic where it creates sort of like a bit of a, you know, a controversy between the two of them and, you know, and it creates a dynamic that I'm interested in watching. And but like they build these things up like with the Hangman Young Bucks the Dark Order where they could play this out for a while and I'm intrigued, but some of the stuff they do just happens within a matter of weeks and it's just done and with no explanation. It's just like, okay, I don't like Hook anymore, so it's over. Okay, I guess, whatever, that happens.
Yeah. I'm hoping this gets better, maybe with the – I mean, it will take some time, but with the addition of these – of a show like Collision where he's got more time to spread things out, that maybe there's more of an attention to detail because it's not going to be this mad rush to try to jam – you know, you have 3 hours every week, and it's like we're trying to jam 4 hours worth of content into 3 hours of television time. Now that he's got a couple of extra hours and things can kind of breathe a little bit more, you know, I'm hopeful, and it's only been a few weeks, so it's hard to judge just yet, but hopeful that it will help alleviate some of the problems you're talking about.
Yeah, they've also got some really just, like, sloppiness everywhere as well. I forget what it's called. Is it the Blind Eliminator Tournament where they're just putting, like, random people together?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like...
And nothing's announced, and some things are announced and others aren't. It makes no sense.
Yeah, it makes no sense. And, like, I think a week ago, Renee was like, yeah, we've been doing this all day. Like, picking people. It's like, there's four teams. How did that take you all day? And, like, all of them were, like, already announced before that. So I have no idea how many people are in this tournament. They've never showed a graphic on the screen. There's at least, like, three major coincidences. And, yeah, this one's exceptionally sloppy storytelling.
I mean, fair enough. I mean, I hope with, like you said, with the extra time, maybe they can just draw these things out a little bit. It makes it a bit more compelling. It just kind of frustrates me when these kind of nonsensical events occur where like Jungle Boy hits Hook in the back of the head for no, because he doesn't like him, because he cares. What, I mean, they were together for like a couple of weeks. Come on, like, what's going on here? maybe the extra time will help a bit. I mean, I'll continue to watch, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. But yeah, I do agree with you that the issues there exist, and it can be tough to take sometimes. Where, like, it's the same issue WWE had for a number of years, where it's like, well, wait a minute, if you're not going to follow up on things, or there's going to be these big glaring holes in your storytelling, why do I invest in anything? Like, I want a complete story if I'm going to invest in it, and if I'm not, or if you're not going to give it to me, I'm going to find it hard to invest in anything that you give me.
Yeah.
Right. Granted, the thing that they're lucky that they have is great talent and great showmanship and great athleticism and good wrestling. So, you know, I'll continue to watch the matches because I like to see that kind of stuff, and I'll continue to enjoy it. I think it's a good time. It's a good watch.
Yeah. No, I agree. Overall, it is for sure.
Yeah.
Anything else, Mark?
No, I think that covers it for this week. I'll take some notes, maybe call you guys back in a week or two.
All right, great.
Awesome.
Sounds good. Appreciate the call as always.
Of course.
Again, if you want to join us next week, sorry, I cut you off there, Mark. Again, if you want to join us next week on the show, all you got to do is 515-605-9345. Give us a call on Monday nights after 9 p.m. Eastern time. You can also email the show. AllEliteAfterShow@gmail.com, and we do have a couple of those already. Let's get through the emails. This one is from Jason, Jason from Long Island, who has a $5 challenge. So we'll get to that later on in the show.
Nice.
Zach in Texas says, "Fellas, I know this lethal lottery style blind eliminator tournament has been messy, but it's hitting me in the nostalgia feels. I have a strange soft spot for the Lethal Lottery. It transports me back to being a kid renting WCW VHS tapes from Hastings or Blockbuster." Hastings, I don't know what Hastings is. Blockbuster, I obviously know.
Hastings,
I don't think made it out here to the New England area.
I don't think it made it out to rural Minnesota either, yeah.
But renting old wrestling videotapes is how I spent many weekends as a child. So, Zach.
Oh, yeah. That was
all on board there.
Yeah.
It was awesome. My favorite part, this is Zach again. My favorite part was always the drawings and seeing the faces of each participant as their names were drawn. I wish Tony Khan had figured out a way to include more of those drawings on Dynamite. I enjoyed the tourney so far, though, and I will readily admit that it hasn't been super smooth. Adam Cole and MJF have been the best part. I just hope that when MJF turns on Cole, Cole sees it coming, but it's still heinous enough to balance out the stickiness of what they're doing now. I think it's basically a foregone conclusion that Kota Ibushi is going to be the fifth man for the Elite in Blood and Guts. Who do you think the BCC's partner is going to be? I don't think it's going to be Jericho. That would be too random. I don't know if there's a natural fit, at least, that I can think of. Collision was great. FTR and the Bullet Club Gold put on a show. Punk and Joe had a really good match. Regina loved Punk. The guy may be an unlikable prick, but he's compelling on the mic. Lastly, we're colleagues now. Oh.
Whoa.
Officially writing the AEW Collision Feud Tracker for the Torch. My first column dropped last Friday. Keep your eyes peeled for that each week. Oh, and to answer Andrew's question, I generally get up at 12 or 12:30, depending on what time I have to go to work. Well, welcome aboard, Zach.
Get up at 12 or 12:30. Yes.
I would imagine that means he's not working first thing in the morning, or else his job would be very upset by the fact that he's getting up.
Oh, waking up at noon, yeah.
No, cool. Well, welcome aboard. And, yeah, who do you think the BCC's partner is going to be?
That is a good question. The rumor mill is CM Punk pitched himself, and they were all like, nope, that's not
which
happening.
Which I think is hilarious, by the way. I would have loved to have seen it, too. And at some point, this is Punk trolling. If he knows the match is not going to happen, and we'll see. I have my suspicions that it still might happen at some point. But if Punk knows that it's not going to happen, to continue to pitch himself as an opponent for the Elite, it's high-level trolling that I appreciate.
Nobody like really stands out. I mean, you could somebody like a Samoa Joe, but I'm assuming it's not going to be him since he's like a collision guy. But somebody like, you know, an MMA type. Is anyone standing out to you?
No. No, not really.
I mean, I guess this would be a reach because he was hurt in this match, but. Santana? I think he's getting somewhat close. I don't know if he would really fit that group, but it could be, like, fun to have him come back in a cage match, but...
Yeah. That would be interesting. I still may go to that show, too.
Next week? Yeah.
Gotta say, we still don't know. It's still up in the air. And next Monday, I might not know even as of next Monday. We'll have to see.
Oh, wow.
Could literally be a game time decision. I digress. Keith sends us an email, says, hey guys, what I propose could be taken as comedy, but I'm looking at this as a mostly serious angle. The title of his email, by the way, is Orange Cassidy, Main Eventer.
Okay.
So Keith says, what I propose could be taken as comedy, but I'm looking at this as a mostly serious angle. Orange Cassidy holds the most prestigious belt in the company. Honestly, he's reliable, popular, and well-liked backstage. So why not the main event? It comes down to the gimmick. So indulge me in some fantasy booking. Orange Cassidy loses the TNT International title, previously beating Luchasaurus and absorbing that paperweight. Okay, I was going to say, how is that happening? But okay. To become a monster heel. Let's say Hobbs. Hobbs brutally beats him down after the match, bloodying him. No one hears from him for weeks. Vignettes begin to appear after Hobbs matches, saying blood is in the water. Dark figure burns pages from the book of Hobbs. After weeks of teasing, the figure appears on screen to challenge Hobbs to a lethal cocktail match. The image is blurry. The voice is distorted. Tired of the games, Hobbs accepts. The lethal cocktail match is a special death match. The man challenger, a vengeful sociopath. His name, Blood Orange. Cactus Jack to Orange Cassidy's dude, Love. During the match, he does the pocket spot, but he pulls out brass knucks on both hands to pummel Hobbs. He pours super glue all over his shoes and sprinkles them with glass and then does the kick spot, only with force, slicing Hobbs with each kick.
Wow.
Now the fun begins, Keith says. That wasn't the fun.
Okay.
He breaks out the lethal cocktail, blood orange juice mixed with rubbing alcohol.
Jeez.
I'll leave the rest to your imagination. After hitting him with the blood clot punch, he pins Hobbs. Best friends tentatively come to celebrate, but he's in no mood. Blood Orange retains some of the charm of the original, but allows him to get into serious territory. He's funny at times, but it's a sick, twisted humor. He cares too much. Attaches a pick I created. Oh, this is actually... he did. He created... he photoshopped. I can send this to you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What he believes Blood Orange could look like. Look, a more serious... My reaction would be this, Andrew. A more serious... somewhat violent version of Orange Cassidy, I would probably prefer over the one that is currently on television.
Yeah, as much as I'm like just kind of burnt out on the character in general, again, he's a great wrestler, he's super over. It is risky because like he is like one of the most consistently popular people on the roster. So to do something that crazy, I mean, I guess if it doesn't work, you just say it was like a short term thing.
Yeah.
I mean, for me personally, yeah, I'll watch it. Like, I'd be more interested in that, than doing just, you know, the exact same. Oh, that is neat. I'm down with that.
I like the orange hair and the orange jacket. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got gloves and the orange hair. Okay.
I'm up for it.
I'm in.
Like I said, I'm sure I'd like it more than what, you know, the current rendition of the,
yeah,
of the characters. And in any event, let's go to Jose from Golden Valley. He said, as great as the Bud line storyline is, the whole cinema talk is nearing what elite fanboys think the elite dissension, inner turmoil, split and reunion, love fest, and this is just brutal. The Wire, It's Always Sunny, the OG Star Trek, Happy Days, Prison Break, they all never won an Emmy, and people are sitting here like, did you see Roman Reigns doing a face? Roman Reigns doing a face. Give them all the little golden statues.
I think it's just the faces he make when he's...
Oh, doing a face. See, we're in wrestling. I'm thinking like baby face. The Dark Side of the Ring episode on Bash at the Beach 2000 sounds uninspired. At its core, it's just two clowns arguing over a finish, which led to a lawsuit because Hulk's our final payday from Turner. How do you really make that a juicy story? I know the producers talk about dealing with carnies and deciphering what's true and what isn't, but it's at its core, they're just carnies having out. They're just carnies by having these out-of-touch hacks go back and forth on these, quote, controversial topics for great TV. Just like they edited Russo and Cornette going back and forth on Brawl for All. But I can see why Mike's sacred demo, the casual fan, would think two con men arguing over a finish would be entertaining. It's not my sacred demo. I mean, just the network sacred demo. It's where they get their money.
I guess I'm moderately intrigued in a Bash on the Beach one. No, probably not, because it was probably just going to be Russo versus Bischoff and their side of the story, and they're both kind of full of crap on that. And, yeah. I'll probably still watch it, I guess, because I've watched most of them, but...
Jose continues, I used to think that Hogan filing a lawsuit over the Russo president was petty, since it would be like Brett suing Sean over the Sunny Days line, but when you think of Hogan's ruthless cutthroat mentality, it makes sense. He knew WCW was done, he knew he was done with WCW, and he knew that Turner would just want to settle, and he didn't want the narrative that he was the bad guy and that Russo was the good guy. He needed fans on his side for whatever he did after WCW. I think that's a pretty fair assessment.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't something like it was well known in Turner. You basically just threaten a lawsuit and it's cheaper for them to pay you off. I think Bischoff said something to the effect, and he was like best friends with Hogan. So he's probably like, hey, yeah, this is a sinking ship. Like, get your millions and just go. That's my guess.
I agree. Chad in Nebraska, quickly, because we're running out of time. I don't want to be here all hours of the night. I do need to go to sleep at some point tonight, Andrew.
Oh, fair enough.
Before the clock turns to Tuesday. That's the goal. Chad in Nebraska checks in. Hope you guys had a better week than PCO, who got lit on fire and had battery acid poured into his mouth.
Yeah, mine was slightly better.
Mine was slightly better, too, I would say. He says, yes, Impact tried to yet again kill someone on the air. We also had a really good main event that you all need to go out of your way to see with Leo Rush and Nick Aldis, without Rob Terry, versus the Mercenary Machine Guns. I know you and Andrew said that you have a soft spot for fan. Said that you have a soft spot for Fandango, but his video this week made me laugh, especially with the name dropping WCW's Blitzkrieg.
Whoa, Blitzkrieg was awesome.
Blitzkrieg was awesome.
Yeah.
Blitzkrieg, I think, is, I don't know if he's on the Mount Rushmore with Rob Terry and Amazing Red, but I mean, he might be close.
I would be up for putting Blitzkrieg. Yeah, I think, it's something we got to put some serious thought into, but I think he's definitely a strong contender to get on there.
I agree. With Slammiversary this weekend, it looks like an overall pretty good show, even though Steve Macklin's getting pulled from his match and replaced with Cody Deaner is a little bit of a letdown. I think without it, Chris Sabin and Leo Rush and Alex Shelley versus Aldis will be the matches of the night, and the Ultimate X will be a close third. He runs down the card, which we'll get to that in a little bit, and then it's a $5 challenge, which we'll get to also in a little bit. Alex in Minneapolis checked in. I know Andrew will die on a cliff believing his boy Jericho is the ultimate pro for doing a lot of jobs lately. I didn't know Jericho was your boy.
I didn't know this either. So this is good to learn this.
Hogan lost 3 times to Billy Kidman, and Kidman gained nothing out of it. Jericho losing a lot lately is just a political move so that when he wins feuds, he can lift up all the losses he's had as a way of defending his wins. Laying down for someone and not putting them over, putting over someone over is losing to them convincingly and then getting something out of it. Orange Cassidy beat him twice, but with the sandbagging slip on the banana roll, on the banana roll-up that looked terrible, and in a gimmick match where Jericho was taking a big bump and memes of him in the pool overshadowed Cassidy's big win. Orange is doing well now with a great little title run and a great story, but that's more on him finally getting a long-standing push than the benefits of his Jericho feud. Speaking of Andrew's Speaking of Andrew's boy, his most TIJ episode. Oh, Talk of Jericho.
I figured it out.
Episode was on the death of Bob Saget.
Oh.
The show was titled The Strange Death of Bob Saget.
I mean, what's the strange death, I guess?
I'm sure because it's Chris Jericho, there was a conspiracy behind it. And...
Oh, there must be some sort of conspiracy behind it. I don't know what it is. I haven't looked into it, but
there's probably someone out there claiming it has to do with the vaccine or something.
Probably. Yeah.
Seems to be how this goes. CM Punk, Alex continues here. CM Punk has about 1,000 voicemails. Quote, hey, Phil, Chris here. Let's talk about a podcast together. Hash some things out. Talk about the whole wrestling cult thing. Not my idea, but come on over to the Jericho compound. Let's order some Domino's. I have a ton of credit after complaining on Twitter to them about their corporate offices. Let's hit the record on the recording of the podcast and see where the conversation goes. Also, my wife is curious if you have seen any of Trump's missing votes in your travel. Sorry, I didn't see that part coming. So I listened to this episode this morning, and I swear to God, these two goofs Chris had on the show came across as the most unknowledgeable people he could have ever talked to about this. I assume he's talking about Bob Saget.
The Bob Saget thing? Okay.
The whole episode pretty much amounted to speculation, followed by, quote, well, the family had the record sealed, so there most likely wasn't foul play, and it's a close case, end quote. And then more speculation. It was literally the definition of stupidity. Hundreds of thousands of people download that podcast, and the wrestling genius is scraping at the bottom of the barrel to push two 50-minute podcasts every week.
Oh, he still does two?
Yes, he does.
I stopped listening. I only listened to a handful of episodes, but yeah, I gave up years ago.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It's just, it's too much.
Too much.
It's too much. Andrew, do you know what it's time for? You know what? It's never too much. What never is too much?
What's that?
$5 challenge.
Yeehaw.
I have a question for you. It's not a $5 challenge question, but
sure.
Do you remember how this started? I was thinking about this today. Do you remember how this started? I don't.
I
did
don't.
Did we just do it one week, like with each other?
Yeah, I don't know why I did, but I came up with some questions, and I asked them to you, and then I was like, I think at the end of the show, I was like, was that fun, or did I just, like, waste your time? You're like, no, that was fun. I'm like, all right, let's do this.
And then we started doing it every week.
Yeah, I'll have to look that up sometime, like, what that was, because I don't...
I bet it's been a year.
Oh, yeah, probably.
If not more.
Yeah. Someday we should, like, compile a book of them all. Oh, yeah.
I know. That'd be great. Oh, that could be a good book.
Could just be, like, put it on Amazon, sell it for a dollar.
Why not? Jason in Long Island sent us an email earlier. He says, Jason from Long Island here, 15-plus year VIP subscriber. I've been a long-time listener of your show, and you guys are great.
Thank you.
I'm not going to tell you that he says he's team body wash in parentheses.
Whoa. All right, next.
Going back to some of the older promotions you covered over the years, what are some of your favorite things you wish Tony Khan could adapt from TNA and Lucha Underground and bring to AEW? Keep up the great show, and I'll keep listening. Side note, I'm definitely not a third burner account to that one.
Shots fired.
And then he has a $5 challenge. I guess I It said $5 in the subject line.
Yeah.
So I thought that that's all he had. But what are some of the things that we covered over the years that we would wish Tony could adapt from TNA? Oh, man, that's a good question. I don't know, Andrew. Do you have anything?
From TNA? I would, off the top of my head, it would be the brief time when they really got behind, like, the Knockouts division. And it was, like, Awesome Kong, Gail Kim. I mean, just, like, find some really, like, hard-hitting, badass women who are putting on good matches. Like, take it more seriously. I mean, like, Jamie Hayter fits that type. But I think that was a lot of fun. Probably... What else? I don't know. I think they did a better job, too, at, like, returning to their major storylines throughout the show. Like, AEW does it, like, once and then moves on. WWE, you know, you'll see the blood, like half a dozen times. And, like, TNA, they would do, like, the main event Mafia, and they would take up multiple segments just to, like, let you know, like, hey, this is the biggest thing going on in the company. And I think they would probably benefit from, like, really doing that at points. You don't always have to do it, but just, like, when something big is going on, like, you can – it's okay to, like, go back to something a few times.
This sounds like a weird thing because I don't know how you do this, but the one thing I remember, like, when we were covering TNA on the show is that their show on Pop, or I think it was Pop when we started. Mm-hmm. Was it Destination America or was it Pop? I think we covered – we started in the Pop era.
Probably, yeah.
But the one thing I would say that there were some of those shows that were just terrible.
Yeah.
But the pay-per-views are always really good. And Tony kind of has adapted that to some extent. But if that was a theme that AEW could, you know, hey, their shows aren't always great, but the pay-per-views hit home runs, then I think that's good.
Yeah. And then I guess just briefly, like, there were times when TNA got more behind their tag teams than they would actually, like, main event pay-per-views with, like, Triple X and America's Most Wanted, people, you know, teams like that. So you could probably do that now and then when, like, it when the feud deserves it.
Okay, $5 challenge. He says he has a theme, and of course, because it's a $5 challenge, his theme is the number 5. Based on the official WWE, WWF / WWWF lineage, can you name the fifth ever WWF or WWWF, WWF / WWE heavyweight champion? Fifth ever.
So, well, it was Buddy Rogers, and then Bruno beat him. And then what did, like, who beat him?
Know Pedro Morales. Pedro Morales was in there at 1.2.
Stan the Man Stasiak was in there too, right? Wasn't he a transition champion?
He was. So I think it was Buddy Rogers, Bruno.
Maybe Stasiak, then Morales. Then no, there had to have been... Because I think Bruno had two crazy long runs, if I'm correct.
He did. He definitely did. I know Pedro Morales was in there. He had a pretty long run.
Yeah.
Bruno had two of them. Billy Graham was in there, too, at one point, I believe. And then Backlund, I think, beat Billy Graham.
Oh, I didn't know Graham had it. Okay.
I'm pretty sure Backlund's... I'm pretty sure Backman beat Billy Graham. However, that doesn't...
I would...
Backman's not the fifth.
No, I would...
I mean, it's possible Bruno could be the fifth.
That was when I was maybe going to guess.
And that second Bruno one was the fifth. So, yeah, I guess it's possible when Buddy Rogers, Bruno, Pedro Morales, Stasiak, and then Bruno again.
Yeah. I wonder if there was one more transitional champ just so they didn't do Morales, San Martino, but I'm not fully confident on that. But so I think Bruno is probably the safest bet.
All right, let's go Bruno. The fifth WWF / WWF / WWE tag team. Champions.
Oh, wow.
I would have no idea.
There was a lot of, like, just, like, thrown together.
I wouldn't even know. I don't even know that I could tell you a tag team from that era, honestly.
No. I mean, it's kind of sad, but, yeah, I mean, like, the oldest tag team I can think of is, like, what, the Wild Samoans, and that was probably, like, 1980, late 70s.
Yeah.
But I know there had to. I mean, there's no way they would have been the fifth, but it's the only team I can think of.
Yeah, I don't know.
And Antonio and... I can't, yeah, I'm getting some of the old timers' names that I haven't really seen much of messed up in my head, so just want to go Wild Samoans.
Wild Samoans, yeah.
Boy, oh boy.
Wild Samoans. Okay. Also, I should have added here. Keith says the answers are the fifth chronological champion, not necessarily the fifth person to hold the title. So
okay.
I think Bruno does make sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Now he drops. So okay, number three here. The WWF/WWE. Oh, that's why. Because it was not there was not a WWF Intercontinental Champion. But the fifth WWF/WWE Intercontinental Champion, the fifth one.
So Pat Patterson's one.
Pat Patterson was one. And I could be wrong about this, but I believe that Ken Patera was actually number two.
Wow. Okay.
And after that, I mean, Tito Santana held it a couple of times. I mean, Patterson won it in 79. I remember that. So now yeah. You're looking at, like, early 80s. So, like, it could be a Tito Santana or a Macho Man or, like, a Ricky Steamboat. Because those guys were holding belts for a long time then. And, like, Steamboat was WrestleMania 3, which was 87, so the title was 8 years old. Would he have been the fifth guy to hold it if it's 8 years old? I don't know.
I would go maybe Tito go before that because he must have had it before WrestleMania 1.
Oh, you know what? Tito was before that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I would maybe go him, especially if he held it multiple times.
I think Tito did hold it. Let's go Tito. Tito Santana. Okay. The fifth WWF/WWE European champion.
Hmm. Who is one?
Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels was number one. He beat the British Bulldog in England.
Dang, that's a weird call.
Because everybody thought it was going to be. Oh no! Wait! No, I began to tell a lie. The British Bulldog won the first one. Michaels beat the Bulldog for the title in England.
That's interesting. Okay.
Bulldog lost the title in his hometown.
Brutal. So Michaels two.
And then DX happened, and then Michaels did like a finger poke of doom thing with Triple H. So I think Triple H was the third one.
Wow.
I might have to remember this. So yes, Bulldog won it in a tournament. He beat, I think he beat Owen Hart for it actually. And then Michaels beat Bulldog for it in England. They did a finger poke thing. The belt went to Triple H. That's when Triple H was feuding with Owen Hart, and I believe Owen Hart beat Triple H for the title maybe at WrestleMania that year. I don't know. No. Well, Triple H and Owen Hart wrestled at Mania that year. That's where Slaughter and China were handcuffed together. So I think Owen Hart beat Triple H. That would have been – he was the fourth – And then did it go – then X-Pac came in the following night. So did it go to X-Pac after that? Because X-Pac had that belt.
Oh.
D-Lo Brown had that belt a few times.
Yeah. I could see Pac beating
It
Owen.
Makes sense to me that it would be X-Pac because X-Pac, again, comes in as a member of DX with Triple H. He gets the title shot against Owen and beats him. That's what makes sense to me.
Okay. I'm down with that. Yeah.
Good. And if you're not, I have two words for you. Okay, this is a good one. The fifth Royal Rumble winner.
So this could be tricky because, like, I think there were two non-televised.
There was at least one, and I know the first one was in 88 because I think that was also the first year they did King of the Ring, which was also untelevised.
Yeah, I think Jim Duggan won the maybe it was only one. So Jim Duggan won the first.
Yes.
So then the following year. Oh, gosh.
So I think that was 88. So then 89. So 88, 89. I just kind of figure out the years here. If we're right that the first one was 88, you would go 88, 89, 90, 91, 92. So who would have won the Royal Rumble in 92? Let me try to work backwards here. 94 was the Luger Bret Hart double win, which means Yokozuna won it 93. 92, I'm drawing a blank on 92.
Oh, was that Flair going to Disney?
92 was Flair. 92, yeah. 92 was Flair.
Okay.
Yeah. Flair. Okay. See how we did. Number one, the fifth WWF champion we had is Bruno Sammartino. The correct answer, Andrew, is not Bruno. But we were talking about this individual, Stan Stasiak, who defeated Pedro Morales.
Dang it.
So there we go. And number two, who is the fifth WWF Tag Team Champions? We had the Wild Samoans. Also not correct. It was Mr. Fuji and Professor Toro Tanaka. Chief Day Strongbow and Sonny King.
Wouldn't have gotten in 1,000 guesses, sadly.
Nope. Fifth Intercontinental Champion we had down as Tito Santana. It was Pedro Morales who beat Don Morocco.
Dang.
0 for 3.
Jeez.
Number four, fifth European champion. Oh, we were on the right track here. We had X-Pac, who I said I thought beat Owen Hart. It was someone who beat Owen Hart, but it was Triple H who beat Owen Hart to become the fifth.
Dang it.
Champion.
You had a good thing going, yeah.
I know. The one thing we did get right, Ric Flair, was the fifth Royal Rumble winner.
Oh, we were not shut out.
Jason, we struggled and only ended up with five.
It was a good one, though. Thank you.
Sorry, one out of five. Okay. Zach in Texas says, now the fun begins for his $5 challenge. This week's $5 challenge is something completely different. It doesn't even require trivia knowledge. Instead of you guys working together, it's going to be Mike versus Andrew. Ooh, okay. I like where this is going.
Okay.
I'm sure you've both seen The Price is Right. Yes, I have. Andrew, have you seen The Price is Right?
I'm familiar with the show, yes.
Okay. Well, now you're going to play it. I went to eBay and looked up wrestling memorabilia and chose five items.
Yes.
You have to guess or rather bid on the price of those items. Whoever gets the closest without going over gets the point. Most points wins.
Yes.
This is awesome. Person with the next birthday bids first. Good luck. Okay. All right. Well, should we alternate that though?
Sure.
Because if not, if you had the next birthday, I could just bet. You know, I could bet a dollar on all of them.
Oh, true. So my birthday was 5 days ago. Same birthday as Adam Cole.
Happy birthday, number
thanks
one.
So much.
I'm not till May, but I guess that means I have the next.
That's you.
So I'll go first. Okay. The first item up for bids. This is awesome. An opened Diamond Dallas Page bobblehead.
Does it say the year?
No. And I have to come up with a bid here, closest without going over. So an opened Diamond Dallas Page bobblehead. I'm going to say $3.
I'm going 12. Wait, so I just have to say more than you, right?
If you think it's more.
Okay. Well, how much did you say?
I said $3. If you think it's less than $3, you would just bid a dollar. Because it's the closest without going over.
Oh, I'll go 301 then.
You're going to go 301. Okay.
Yeah. Feel good about that.
All right. So the second item up for bids, you're going to bid first on this one. A 2010 WWE magazine with Randy Orton on the cover.
Oh, gosh.
2010. Not a lot of nostalgia there for 2010.
No, not at all. That's going to be $1.75.
$1.75. Okay. I'm going to say 50 cents.
Ooh.
I'm going to go under a dollar on that one. Number three, unopened WWF trivia game from 1998. And I guess I'm bidding on this one. Okay, so in unopened WWF trivia game from 1998, unopened makes me believe that you could have some value to this.
Because that
seems to be a thing. So I'm going to say, I'm going to bid $24.
I wonder if I actually have this game, because I think it's sitting in my garage. It's opened. it's brutally difficult if it's the one I'm thinking of. But I will go I'm going to go 24-01. I think it's more than that. Yeah.
All right. Number four, Andrew, you're bidding first on this one. A ticket stub from Triple H's debut event in Moline, Illinois, April 26th, 1995.
Oh, that's an odd one.
That is an odd one.
The thing is, too, sometimes you'll get crazy people who are like, I'm selling this for $10,000. But
true.
I'm going to go, that's pretty unique. It's not signed, but, I mean, there's only a limited amount in existence. So I'm going to go
$85. $85. Okay. I am going to go, I'm going to go 8501 on you.
Oh, interesting.
Go 8501. I think we may be 100 or something, but I'm going to go 8501 to give myself some room. All right. Number five, an extra large 1990 Jake the Snake Roberts t-shirt.
Does it say if it's worn, used?
It does not.
Extra large. Okay.
Extra large 1990 Jake the Snake Roberts t-shirt. I have to assume that there is a market for vintage t-shirts. However, it cannot be a big one, especially if it's a worn t-shirt. I'm going to say $30. I'm going to bid $30.
Oh, I'm going to go a penny then, because then I got anything up to 30.
You have anything up to 30.
All right. I would guess $17 or something, but I could be way off. So I'll go a penny.
All right. Let's see how we did. Number one, an opened Diamond Dallas Page bobblehead. Who's the closest without going over? My bid was $3. Andrew then bid $3.01. The point goes to Andrew.
Yes.
Because the actual retail price, $139.
Wow. Okay, so I think my guess was like $12.
The starting bid is $139. I'm going to send you I can send you the links. Cause you
yeah, please
links
do. Too. Yeah.
$139. All right. Andrew's up 1-0. The 2010 WWE magazine with Randy Orton on the cover. Andrew, you bid first here. You bid $1.75. I guess I probably should have bid a penny because I would have had anything from that to 175. I forgot, bid 50 cents. However, I still will get the point because the actual retail price, 99 cents.
Oh, okay.
You were over at $1.75. I was under at 50 cents.
That DDT bobblehead is ugly.
Yes, it is.
That takes up a lot of room.
Want to talk about ugly? Look at the cover of that WWF or WWE magazine. Oh, boy. An unopened WWF trivia game from 1998. You said you think you have this. You'll be able to tell if you do.
Yeah.
2 seconds because I'm texting it to you. This is amazing, honestly. I bid first on this one, $24. You bid $24.01 because you think I was way under here.
Yeah.
You were correct. You get the point. The actual retail price, $269.
That's insane. I think I have this open. Like, it's in better condition than this.
That's amazing. That's awesome.
I was just going to give it away, too. That's the same bit.
Number four, ticket stub from Triple H's debut event in Moline, Alabama, April 26, 1995. Who bid for you must have bid for based on the numbers. You bid $85. I bid $85.01, thinking that it was going to be higher than $85. The asking price, $1,000.
Dang! I after I said 85, I was like, no, I should have gone like 150 or something. But geez.
And you can barely make out the writing on this ticket stub. That's how old it is.
Take a pass on buying that.
I mean, maybe if it was signed, I could see it.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. It's a unique one.
And then the 1990 Jake the Snake Roberts t-shirt. I bid $30. You bid 1 cent. This decides the game.
Oh, my gosh.
It's closest to the price without going over. I feel like Bob Barker right now. This is awesome.
My heart's beating fast.
The actual retail price, $150.
No, I lost.
And it's an awful looking shirt.
I should have gone. I said, like, people sell things for crazy prices. I should have gone on that. One watched in the last 24 hours.
It definitely looks like it's been worn.
Oh, yeah. I'm not touching that thing.
Yeah, it's definitely been worn. But, well, that was fun.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I like that. A wrestling version of The Price is Right. Okay.
Even though I lost, I had a good time.
This is – who is this? This is Jose in Golden Valley. His $5 challenge this week, of course, wrestling in the mainstream. Jose loves these, and we do awful at them.
We always – yeah, yeah.
You are on a – you guys are on a two-week shutout streak. Last week's clown shoes attempt doesn't count. If you're going to be sticklers – if you're going to be sticklers for this and be $5 challenge, then cut some slack and copy-paste errors. I guarantee you the man who pays your guys' Wi-Fi has had many grammatical errors in his newsletter over the years. Okay. But it wasn't a copy-paste error. It was like the same answer, copy
it's
twice.
The same answer. Yeah. We're serious professionals here.
Time to be looking up answers?
Unbelievable.
Wrestling in the mainstream from Jose. Number one, CM Punk was a guest on Late Night with Jimmy Fallon in 2012. Who were the other two guests that he hung out with in the green room? I mean, I have no idea.
Who was famous in 2012? Was Kevin Hart famous in 2012?
Yeah, probably. Kevin Hart in Late Night with Jimmy Fallon was not the Tonight Show, so it would have been a late. Yeah, that's like the 1 a.m. show. So yeah, Kevin Hart, that would have made some sense. And who else was – oh. Jonah Hill, he wasn't really famous. I mean, he was.
He might have been.
Like,
because it was post-Superbad, so.
That's what I'm thinking. It's kind of between Superbad and when he did, like, before he became tried to become a serious actor.
Oh, like Wolf of Wall Street, Moneyball type?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. I'll go with those two. Number two, WWA legend Nathan Jones had a show-stealing performance in Troy. How much money did the film make at the box office from the rub he gave the movie?
Well, I feel like we should get a range. Like, it can be off by $10 million, but we have to get, like, the exact
number, Andrew.
This could be, like, one of the most difficult questions because, like, I'm assuming it made, like, and plus, what, is it worldwide or just, like, in the United States?
Doesn't specify.
I don't think it was.
I have to imagine. I mean, I remember the movie. It's going to be a $100 million movie, at least.
Yeah, I don't think it was a colossal blockbuster, but I think it must have made it. I would guess between $1 and $200 million.
So unless, how about $186.4?
I like that. I'm taking half a point if it's $184 without the
point. Okay. I like it. What former WWE star had a cameo in the Jack Black classic Nacho Libre?
I've somehow never seen this.
Neither have I. Hold on. I went to the movie theater to see this.
Yeah.
And about 15 minutes into the movie, I fell asleep.
Oh.
Because it was that bad.
Really? Is that a thing you do often or just that one in particular?
No. I think it's the only time I've ever fallen asleep in a movie.
Wow.
It was awful.
Damn it. If you were awake, you would maybe know who's in it.
I know. It was a horrifically bad movie. This is going to sound crazy, but like, it was about Lucha people. So like, would have Rey Mysterio have been in it? I don't know. I'm just guessing.
It's an educated guess.
Seems plausible. Number four, what wrestling personality had a guest appearance in the CBS drama The Mentalist in 2014?
Do you say WWE personality?
No, wrestling personality.
Who's a wrestling personality?
I don't know. How about KM? Because KM seems to be an answer in this weekly.
He's a wrestling personality. He's a character.
And he did CBS shows. KM, Kevin Matthews. Here we go. Number five, Matt Stryker was a contestant on what Fox reality series?
Oh, boy. The only one I can remember is Joe Millionaire, but no, that was guys and one guy and a bunch of women. I Love Island. No, that's I'm sure not.
Makes sense to me.
I guess it's just I'm fine.
Is that a Fox show?
It was Temptation Island, I think.
Temptation Island. Okay.
Somebody might have been tempted by Matt Stryker.
Maybe. Let's see. Number one, CM Punk was on Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. What other two guests were on the show that night? We had Kevin Hart and Jonah Hill. The correct answer was Joan Rivers and Fiona Apple.
Okay, so not we weren't very close. Fair enough.
Nope. The movie Troy had Nathan Jones in it. How much did it make at the box office? $186.4 million was our guess. The number was $497.4 million.
I wonder if that's... I feel that's got to be worldwide, unless it was just like a colossal hit.
I think it's got to be worldwide, too. What WWE star had a cameo in the Jack Black classic Nacho Libre? Rey Mysterio was our guest. The correct answer was El Torito. I guess that makes sense. Was he one of the minis?
He must have been. Oh, yeah. Troy does say, on Wikipedia, it does say $497.4 million, but it doesn't. Sorry, I'm now distracted by this.
Down the rabbit hole you go.
Yeah. 60th highest grossing film at the time of its release. What the? Oh, okay. It grossed 133 in the United States. So we were off by like 40, 50 million.
Yeah.
So it was a worldwide smash.
Wrestling personality that gets appearance in the CBS drama The Mentalist 2014. We guess KM because he's been an answer to all these. Dario Cueto was the correct answer.
Yes, love him.
Matt Stryker was a guest, always a contestant on what Fox reality series we had, Temptation Island. Correct answer was Labor of Love.
I don't know what that is.
Do we even remember it?
Shut out.
But, okay, now that that's done. Andrew, we've got a couple more. There's one from Alex. There's one from Chad. I'm going to save those for next week because we are running out of time in our blog talk window. So before we do, though, is there anything else that you need to get to?
I got to get to five questions if you got a little bit of time.
We have a little bit of time, so I do.
Okay. Then
I'm ready.
We're going to the $5 challenge.
I like it.
Newer listeners, if Mike gets all five of these correct, I will send him $5. It's an amazing opportunity to make a lot of cash. Like the Price is Right. Today's
total
theme...
Total money to date, by the way.
carry the one to add another. Oh, yeah, yes. There. I don't know about you, but I just went to my 20-year high school reunion this past weekend. Trippy.
Wow.
Really feel old. Anyways, so this is reunion. That's the theme tonight.
I like it. Okay.
All right. At TLC 2009, who did the reunited DX defeat for the tag titles?
I should know this. They defeated 2009. They would have defeated Eminem? Were they still a tag team then? I don't think they were. So I don't think it's them. I was thinking they had that 06 reunion where they did the tag team match against Vince and Shane.
Mm-hmm.
Eminem would have been a tag team then, but 2009 they weren't. So 2009, who did they defeat for the tag team titles? That would have been Cody and Ted DiBiase? Were they Legacy or something like that at that point?
Legacy, yes.
That's my guess. I have no idea if they ever held the tag team championships, but I do remember Triple H and Shawn Michaels in some sort of match with those guys. So I'm going to guess that.
Okay. Question number two, which pay-per-view did the reunited Hogan, Hall, and Nash as the NWO first appear at in WWE?
I know it was right before WrestleMania, and I don't think it was at the Royal Rumble. So it had to have been at that one in between, which I think at that point was called No Way Out. And it would have had to have been 2, I think.
2, all right. Question number 3, what influential tag team reunited on Raw on March 14th, 2005 to take for the first time in over a decade?
The Rockers. I'm almost 100% confident about that. I recently saw a picture of Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty together when they did reunite on Raw, and the timeline lines up. So I have to assume it was that.
All right. Question number 4. In September of 1998, who were the 4 active roster members of the Four Horsemen when they reunited on Nitro?
Oh, man. The 4 active members of the Four Horsemen when they reunited in 1998 would have been Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Lex Luger, and who was the 4th guy? Steve McMichael? I think that's it. Yeah, I think that's it.
Last question. Similar to number 3, which famous TNA tag team joined forces for the first time in over a decade to battle Honor No More at Against All Odds 2022?
Motor City Machine Guns. Yeah, I think it was I'm pretty sure it was the Motor City Machine Guns. It was only last year. Why does it... second guessing myself.
5 questions, okay. 5 answers. Are you locked in?
I am.
Seacrest, out!
Oh, that was a fun one. That was super random.
Yeah, I just found it in the soundboard.
I forgot that I used to do that for a little bit.
Seacrest, out.
You did not get 5, all 5. I hate to break the news, but you did get 2.5. I'm going to give you 2.5.
2.5? Okay.
Yeah.
How would I have got half? That's curious. Go ahead. I'll let you answer because that's curious how I got half. I guess tag team questions may have been how.
2009, who did the Reunited DX defeat for the tag titles? You guessed the Legacy. Great guess, but it was Jericho. Jericho on the Big Show.
Jericho. That was also a time where they were like, we're going to take these 2 singles guys, put them in a tag team, and just combine their names.
Oh, Show Miz, Rated RKO.
Oh.
Yeah. Ugh, gross. Which pay-per-view did the Reunited Hogan Hall Nash first appear at in WWE? You guessed No Way Out 2002. 1,000% correct. And that's kind of fun because No Way Out has the initials NWO.
Oh, that is cool. I never put that together.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Which influential tag team reunited on Raw March 14, 2005 to take for the first time in over a decade? You guessed the Rockers. 100% correct. It was the Rockers.
Not the new Rockers.
No, not Lee Cassidy. Kind of fun, though, if all 3 joined forces.
Can you imagine? That'd be great.
In September of 98, who were the 4 active roster members of the Four Horsemen when they reunited
on
Nitro?
This must have been when I got my half on.
Yeah, I was being a little hint in there when I said active roster members because Arn Anderson was retired by the time.
Oh, yes.
You guessed Flair, yes. Anderson, Luger, and McMichael. You were right with Flair and McMichael. Luger was not in the group at the time. The other 2 were Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko.
That's right. I remember that now.
Which famous TNA tag team joined forces for the first time in over a decade to battle Honor No More? Hope you don't feel bad about this one. You said Motor City Machine Guns. It was America's Most Wanted.
Oh, that's right. Didn't Motor City Machine Guns did reunite on an Impact to fight someone? Was that not last year?
I think that was over.
During COVID. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I don't know. The last 36 months all just blend together.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, I don't remember fully when COVID was. I lived through it, but it was like, was that 2 years ago at this point? 3?
Yeah. 3. 2020, right? Yeah, 2020.
Oh, damn.
3 years ago.
Yeah.
Back in the day. All right, well, I'll take my 2.5. It's one of my better showings, honestly, so I'll take it.
Absolutely. I'm going to mark that down, 2.5. Well done.
I'll take it. Anything else, Andrew?
I think that's all I got.
Well, tell the fine people where they can find you.
Well, fine people, you can find me at the Unexpected Storytelling Podcast.
We're assuming they're fine people.
There's probably a knucklehead out there, too, but I think mostly our listeners are very fine people. The Unexpected Storytelling Podcast, not wrestling related at all. It is a horror, comedy, silliness, original stories every month, usually like 20-so minutes, working on new ones this summer. So check us out, Unexpected Storytelling Podcast.
You can follow me on Twitter at TorchBeakMan. You can email the show, alleliteaftershow@gmail.com. Again, if you want to listen to the show live, you can do so over on the PW Torch Blog Talk Radio page on Monday nights beginning at 9 p.m. Eastern. You can also call us, 515-605-9345, or email the show, alleliteaftershow@gmail.com. That's going to do it for this week's show. Thanks for listening, downloading, sending in your emails. Chad and Alex, we'll get to your $5 challenges next week. But that'll do it for this week's show. We'll talk to you next week. Have a very good rest of your wrestling week. Goodbye.